The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. It's the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news talk here in Tucson. And it's always a pleasure to come into your home or into your car or wherever you are on Buckmaster. And Bob Dio, doing such a great job, Bob. It's always good to have you, your smiling face on the other side of the glass. I'm very lucky. I have John Couch Mondays and Tuesday. John does a great job. And then I have Bob Dio with us Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So what that means is when I see Bob's smiling face, it means it's hump day, and the weekend, before you know it, we'll be here with our Friday Focus interview and the roundtable, and then another weekend will be with us. But anyway, we did get a few sprinkles up at our house this morning. Would not qualify as a summer rainy season monsoon by any means. We're still looking at two events of over 30 minutes duration in the month of July up at our house. Not really a great summer thunderstorm season that we have been having. It's Buckmaster, and of course, all of our podcasts available 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. The live line number 790-2040. We're going to begin with Dr. Mark Stegeman, who's one of the five members of the Tucson Unified School District, which is the second largest school district in the state of Arizona. Mark was president of the governing board for the first 6 months. Now the baton has been handed off to Adelita Grijalva for the second 6 months of the year. And this is something, first of all, good to see you, Mark. Thanks for coming in.
Always a pleasure, Bill.
This was something you and the board had agreed upon, or how did that even come about, that split decision, half the year for you and half for Ms. Grijalva?
I think Layla Counts might be the person who first promoted splitting the presidency in 2 6-month parts, or maybe it was me, I don't know, but there was a majority to do that. We hadn't decided who would serve the second 6 months, but I said at the start, Anyone who has three votes from the rest of the board can have my vote as well. I'm trying to get past the perception that there was two camps on the board.
Yeah, the split board, 3-2 on everything. You know, it's people want a unified board.
Well, unified might be too much to ask for, but more unified.
More unified.
Or less divided.
Yeah.
And yes.
And one issue that keeps coming up is this 10 o'clock, we'll call it a curfew, for want of a better word, about when the board should really end their meetings. I happened to see a clip, I guess it was from a recent board meeting.
Last week.
Oh, it was last week's board meeting, and it was right about 10 o'clock, and tempers were very short. Between Ms. Sedgwick and Ms. Grijalva. And do you contend that it was better off for 3 years there was a policy to end all board meetings at 10 o'clock? People just not making good decisions. It's been a long day, on and on, right?
Yes, that was a policy that Michael Hicks brought in, and that was one of his positive contributions. Well, he suggested it, and the board voted for it. And I thought it was, after the fact, I thought it was great. It's not just because we don't make as good decisions, but people have gone to bed. They're not paying attention. There's less transparency when you're making decisions late at night. It's burdensome on the staff that have to wait and wait and wait way past normal working hours, to say the least. So I think, and of course, you do see a lack of decorum breakdown sometimes.
What time do your meetings start?
4 or 4:30, depending on the length of the agenda.
Wait a minute. They start at 4:30 and go till after 10?
Yeah, well, under my presidency, we were ending sometime 10 to 10:20 generally because we would finish something up.
Yeah.
But now they're going late.
Long meeting.
Yes, and people simply aren't, and I include myself, I'm not making as good decisions after 10 o'clock either.
Yeah.
When I first came on the board 10 years ago, it was a habit of the board to go very, very late sometimes.
After midnight sometimes?
certainly after 11.
Okay.
Occasionally after midnight. And we fixed that.
Uh-huh.
And I hate to see us go back to that.
Mm-hmm. So, got a lot of important issues. School starts in the Tucson Unified School District tomorrow, correct?
Yes.
What's your assessment as we open school in the 2019-2020 year? Overall, how would you? What's the state of the district?
We have not received an enrollment figure that I know of. So that's item number one, is how many students did we lose this year? And I'm afraid to say it's almost certain that we did lose students, as we have lost every year for a long time. But we haven't received that number. So that's a huge thing that's hanging out there. I'm guessing it'll be another 1,000 students, but I don't know that.
And you're down to 40-some? 40.
It depends how you count, but about 44,000.
I remember when the district was like 70,000 or something.
I'm not sure it ever got to 70, okay. But it got to the mid-60s.
Yeah, it was up there.
Yeah. Oh, yes, we have lost, compared to all of Arizona's other large districts, TUSD has lost much more enrollment over the past few years. Everyone's losing some to the charters, but TUSD has lost more.
Mm-hmm. So that's the main issue, right? Trying to stop the hemorrhaging.
For me.
Yeah.
And I think not just for me. And partly because for a couple of reasons. First, because that's the market speaking. And how do you know whether you're producing a good product? Do people want their kids in the system? And secondly, of course, because it has an immediate and direct impact on the budget.
Mm. The budget picture looks...
Well, the budget picture is not so good.
Hmm.
We have been running a bit of a deficit. Our cash reserves are probably at the lowest point they've been at since I've been on the board. And I'm concerned about it. I think the board has, in some cases, spent excessively on compensation increases over the last couple of years, and I'm concerned about it.
Your mid-year report is in front of me, and when I say mid-year, we're talking about this is a report that you sent out to your constituents and members of the media. This was January 15th.
Yes, it's not really mid-year, is it, anymore?
Well, I call it mid-year because you operate on a kind of a different... You don't operate on the calendar years.
That's
you
operate very on the yes, yes.
But anyway, this was okay. Your first report of 2019, where you summarized four major board actions at the end of 2018. You said there were two wins on longstanding issues. The board acted to end financial losses at the standalone preschools. The board finally decided to allow a boundary review. You're happy then with both of those items, I assume.
Well,
are those?
As it turns out, we have heard, and I am going to send the superintendent a question about this. We have heard nothing about the boundary review.
Wow.
So it has, maybe it's happening somewhere, but the board has heard nothing about it. Oh. And I'm afraid the IELCs may have taken a loss again this year, probably smaller than in the past, but... That's another question we need to get answered.
Has there been any positive news concerning desegregation?
Yes, there was huge positive news. A court ruled in our favor, and our means TUSD and Pima County, and said that the state's attempt to not pay a few million dollars of desegregation was unconstitutional. And so we will get that money. And that was an expected win. But the ruling was even a little bit stronger, I think, than we had hoped for. So that attempt to cut DSEG funding failed. But, of course, the legislature, the DSEG funding exists because of a statute. And so the legislature always has the option to go back to the original statute and change it. And so it's certainly not as if that funding is protected forever. But TUSD won this round.
And TUSD has been under a DSEG order since 1979, something like that, right?
basically, yeah, since about, well, the case went several years, but late 70s.
Wow. Also a win in the new English language curriculum.
Yes. For me, that is the single biggest win of the semester. TUSD has had historical problems in curriculum, has them to this day, in my opinion, but we did adopt a new math curriculum about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, which I think has been a success. And now we have a new comprehensive English language arts curriculum, the first revision in many, many years. And I'm optimistic that this will be a big win, too.
There's also a revision coming in what has traditionally been called sex education. There's a new name for it right now, isn't there? What do you call it? Family life issues or something?
Yes, we we put euphemisms on lots of things. I don't think it's helpful because it just doesn't fool anybody. Of course, not all of the material in this actually is about sex. So there is stuff about relationship management, which really is goes beyond sex education. Family life is out for a bit. It makes you think it's about, like, you know, how to play board games or something.
Or something, yes.
That's not how to plan a trip.
No,
that's not what it's about.
No.
Yes, that is coming. That is something that the board got a lot of input of about 3 years ago from students and teachers. There was a concerted effort to say you need to update this. Last update was in 2006. And so something is going to happen. But there have been a lot of process problems. And this is, unfortunately, what we saw with Mexican-American studies. There were lots of process problems. What we saw with that economics course from the Conservative Freedom Center. And so there have been process problems with this and that. Just makes a complicated thing more complicated.
Process problems being lots of challenges. Is
well, no, no.
I mean,
in my opinion, we have not been on this, and I don't want to say too strongly, but we have not been in compliance with the open meeting law on how we've handled this. And the way the committee
You've
was
not been in compliance with the open meeting law.
Well, I am afraid. Yeah, I hate to say that, but I.
Have you said that before on any other media?
I'm not sure I said it that directly.
Well,
I've said it in email to the superintendent.
You said it right here on the Buckmaster Show.
Well, Bill, I think it's pretty open and shut in this case, unfortunately.
Okay.
So.
Anyway, Mark Stegeman with us, Dr. Stegeman, who teaches game theory at the University of Arizona, game economics. And getting ready for a new school year over at the U of A, but summer's gone too fast, hasn't it, Mark?
Yes. I can answer that concisely, yes.
It's time to talk about my favorite bakery in town, Mark.
Would that be Mona's?
It would be. Thank you very much. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Open each morning for breakfast at 6:30. And, of course, they're open right now for lunch. Steve and the team, what a great job those bakers do there. They're up so early making sure the bread is great and fresh for your sandwich and for your breakfast. So think about the ham and eggs and a couple of slices of rustic bread. That's one of my favorites, done so beautifully at Mona's DanishBakery.com, and at the Buckmaster Show, there is a link to Mona's and a link to all of our great sponsors. We'll be right back with Dr. Stegeman, 790-2040, right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amori, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
All right, welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Mark Stegeman with us on the Buckmaster Show. Getting back to that whole sex ed thing, most of the content is not that controversial. Is that your contention?
I would expect that, I mean, everyone has a different opinion, but I would expect that most of the content would not be controversial for most people. There's a lot in there about relationship management, how to say no, what to do if you get in a bad situation. I think most people think that's good, good content. There are a few bits that are more controversial.
Teachers will be getting a pay raise, correct, as they start the school year? The salary increase is very
good.
Yes,
there's a significant pay raise for teachers and counselors. That's true generally across the state because there was more money for education in the budget, less than what we had hoped for, but definitely a significant new money.
This puts TUSD, the teacher salaries, I think are going to be some of the highest in the area. It's about an $8,000 increase since the 2015-2016 school year. So that's 23% increase in their compensation.
Yes.
Over the past 4 years. So that's very good news because that's a big issue, certainly with teachers.
Yes, of course, the other districts have raised salary too, but I think that's good for everyone because teachers are generally undercompensated for what they do, and they're undercompensated also by the market's judgment because it's getting increasingly hard to hire teachers. And I'm an economist, and we're supposed to pay attention to that. And when there's excess demand at the market wage, you expect wages to go up. So yes, it's a good thing. I was disappointed this year that we did not move further into giving extra pay to teachers in hard-to-fill fields like science and math and special ed. I have pushed for that for years. That's also responding to the market. But the union resistance to that is intense, and we made no additional progress on that.
How about this issue concerned not only, of course, it's good news for the teachers, but then there's the issue of how do we get the test scores at TUSD up? That's got to be one of your priorities for the school year.
Yes. TUSD lags the state in the results in standardized tests. I certainly agree with the critics who have questions about what those mean, and they're also very narrow, those tests. They don't test at all a lot of the things that we aim to teach, but TUSD does lag the state. It lags the state overall. If you look at lower-income students in particular, our scores are considerably below the state averages. If you look at different ethnic groups, especially African-Americans, our scores are significantly below state averages, so that's not good.
What are some of the, we've talked about enrollment, certainly that's got to be a big issue.
But let me add
go
one
ahead,
thing, Bill, that our math scores have gone up a little bit. They've gone up statewide, mm-hmm. but TUSD's math performance has gone up a little bit, and English has gone up a little bit. So the trend is modestly up in line with the rest of the state.
Will there be schools? I forget what the portfolio is. Is we have in TUSD
86.
86. Yeah. 86 schools. Will the portfolio, are there plans to shrink that portfolio?
No. Closing schools has become a bit of a third rail in TUSD. We went through one big round of closure in 2010 mm-hmm. under Dr. Fagan. Another big round in 2013 under Dr. Petticone, although actually both superintendents quit the year of the big closures, so that was like a transition year. Anyway, since then they have been, that's been a third rail topic. We are looking at possibly, and there was an item about this on the last agenda, reopening Wakefield Middle School, which has been sitting mostly unused, and I think it's worth looking at that. But we have thousands of seats of excess capacity, and I don't know how long the district can ignore that.
Santa Rita's doing a little better, according to Dr. Trujillo, was here a week or so ago, and I think he said things are looking better with their enrollment. It's up a little bit.
Yes, that's what I heard.
More of a vocational school over there, right?
Yes, that's mm-hmm. been his vision. Uh-huh. I think it makes sense. Santa Rita has been one of the biggest problems for the district for many years. It reached a gradually increasing level of crisis, I guess. I give Dr. Teo credit for being the first superintendent to really take that on explicitly and develop a model for fixing it. It would have been better if that model had come in 5 years ago, but I give him credit for taking this issue on as opposed to sweeping it under the blanket.
There were a couple of items during your last visit that I wanted to revisit. We try to get you on this program at least every quarter. You had talked about the discipline code. Is that now in effect?
Well, they made another round of changes to the student disciplinary code, and I think they were positive in many cases. They made it easier to escalate some offenses, like low-level offenses like swearing, whereas before it just get in trouble 100 times and nothing would happen. And they've changed that a little bit. I don't think it goes far enough. There are things that I think should be in there that aren't. I still don't think we pay enough respect to teachers' rights under statute. And that was an issue that they voted on late at night after I had left the meeting again. And I actually requested at the meeting.
Did they wait on some of these controversial issues?
Well, I'm not.
Let's wait for after 10 o'clock. We know Dr. Stegman has a family, needs to get home. Let's just wait, and then we'll take the vote. After.
No, I think that's a little too paranoid. But before I left, and I'm leaving partly because of family obligations.
Well, I promised my wife to get home. Yeah. And this is not a high-paying job that you're involved in.
Oh, it's very high-paying, Bill.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Zero.
I have a district cell phone.
Oh.
And we get boxed dinners at the meetings.
There you go. Let's quickly address some of the other items that were brought
up.
But
I would have voted against it.
You would have?
I don't think it goes far enough.
Substitutes pay?
This is the substitutes contract and pay has been a battle for several years. And I'm proud of the fact that I have been a leading advocate for increasing substitutes' pay, for bringing them in under a district contract where they get regular health insurance again.
They're part of the team. Yeah.
Well, they are part of the team, and the long-term substitutes frequently are doing essentially what regular teachers do.
Right.
And they were being compensated at a far lower rate, and we have closed that gap significantly. And I have pushed very hard for that. And we had outsourced them.
Let's see if I can get in a couple more items. Abolishing the do not hire list. This was the notorious blacklist at TUSD. Is that gone?
Well, it's certainly
the
revised.
Black book
Dr.
of
Trujillo,
who not to hire.
Dr. Trujillo struck a lot of names on that list. I have given credit to him before for finally being someone who is willing to address that issue. I have been working for many, many months on a set of policy changes to prevent that from ever happening again. I've been in the last several months working with Layla Counts so that we can hopefully present a united front, something that we both support, and hopefully, a lot of hopefullys there, but hopefully that'll come back to the board in August. It's probably become a little more complicated because there was a big story on the news about a TUSD employee who probably should have been on something like a do not hire list. And so, but I think that doesn't change the overall question. And it's bad to, TUSD has a history of reacting, and it's bad to overreact to one event. I think we'll still get to a set of policy changes that balances the competing interests here.
How are you getting along with the board members?
Well, I feel I get along fine with the board members. Mm-hmm. I have always said that interpersonal relationships matter too much on the TUSD board. And you saw a little bit of it in that clip.
Yeah, I did.
It shouldn't matter, but somehow it does.
Hmm.
And I think it matters more the longer people serve on the board, the more they...
Maybe there should be term limits for TUSD board members.
Well, I really wonder about that.
Yeah.
In some states, there are term limits. I was watching with my family The Music Man, that old musical.
Yeah, sure.
And one of the things that happens there is that he turns the school board into a singing group. But there's a line in there about, that'll never happen. These guys have hated each other for 15 years. And my wife just cracked up.
That's kind of close to home there for you, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah. Well, I don't hate any of them.
No, though. You don't hate
Absolutely
any.
Absolutely not.
No. Dr. Mark Stegeman joining us here on the Buckmaster Show. Good to talk with you again, kind of catch up with you. Mark, thank you very much.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Bill.
And you're getting ready for school at the U of A?
I should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When does school start this year?
It always starts around the third week of August, so we have a little extra time.
Getting close. All right, Dr. Stegeman will exit, and we will bring in our next newsmaker interview. That will be the chairman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Richard Elias. The program is Buckmaster. We're on 1030 The Voice, your source for trusted news talk here in Southern Arizona. We'll take our mid-break here, be back with Supervisor Elias right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. They're a legacy sponsor. They've been pretty much with us since day one when we launched the project here on the radio back in January of 2011. I'm so proud of these people because they realize that the Buckmaster Show listeners are always looking for kind of a weekend getaway, right? Especially in the summertime, where to go to a place that is cooler. With me, Pima County Supervisors Chair Richard Elias, and I know Silver City and the fine people in Grant County, they do such a great job of promoting their area. And Richard, I know you love that area.
It's absolutely a beautiful place and a great place to go and enjoy some time off. And the Gila Wilderness area is particularly beautiful.
It's America's first wilderness area, believe
that's
it or
right.
not. Yeah,
the very first one.
Yeah, the Gila National Wilderness.
And deservedly so.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. I kind of like those green chili cheeseburgers over there, too. I'm just saying. Yeah.
After you cross the state line and welcome to the land of enchantment, do you want green or red?
It's the only thing that matters.
That should be the the state question in New Mexico. Is it going to be green or red? And, you know, I've never been able to figure it out because I guess – because some people will say, well, which is going to be hotter? Well, I guess it just depends on the crop, right, that comes out of Hatch or wherever.
But this is how I deal with
it. Okay, tell me.
I ask at every restaurant I go to.
Okay.
And every meal, because it's
sure.
going to be different
it is
according to
be
how
different.
A chef makes it.
It is going to be different. So that's another reason to take the three-hour drive from Tucson and visit southwestnewmexico.org. That's their great website. Tells you about great places to stay and all those recreation opportunities. Like Supervisor Elias mentioned, the Gila National Wilderness, and on and on. So lots to do. And here's the good news. It's cooler over there because the elevation is anywhere from 5 to 7,000 feet. There's going to be some big news. Perhaps this afternoon, a judge is going to rule on the Rosemont mine here in town. What's at stake here, Supervisor Elias?
Well, this is about an injunction that would stop the construction from continuing on until those lawsuits that have been filed are resolved. So it's a very important day. From the reports that I've heard, the judge seemed to have reviewed the information very carefully, had very good, well-developed questions, which leads one to believe that he's taking this request for injunctive relief very seriously.
Pima County Board of Supervisors went to court over the Rosemont mine, indirectly challenging whether the Toronto, Canada-based mining group known as Hudbay Minerals can go forward with the plans for the open-pit copper mine in the Santa Rita Mountains. Putting that mine there, and you wrote about this a couple of months ago in an op-ed with Chairman Edward Manuel,
yes,
from the Tohono O'odham Nation, you joined together in an op-ed. You said that putting that mine there is a, what'd you say as far as a desecration?
It's ultimately a desecration.
Yeah, a desecration of that area. Is this a scar on Mother Earth that we're going to regret if this thing moves forward, Richard Elias?
Well, I think so. And I tell you, I flew to Salt Lake a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and flying into town there, looking at all the open pit mines that have scarred that region and the Wasatch Mountains, that's how we're going to look, and it's not a pleasant view. But more important, I think, is what we're doing to our water. And the fact that ultimately the mitigation that Hudbay is offering in the watershed is non-existent, can't be done. So water, air quality, desecrating the cultural resources of the Tohono O'odham, and ultimately desecrating one of our beautiful sky islands is just a bad prescription for us all here.
One of my Facebook friends posted a photograph. They were flying Tucson to Seattle, I believe, and they took a picture at 35,000 feet of this huge monster open pit mine up in Nevada, and somebody said, oh, that's like the world's largest gold mine or something. But that thing just looked, it was just incredible how this thing just looks like a scar on the earth.
Absolutely is. You know, I have a little place up there in Mount Lemmon in Willow Canyon, and I'm probably 100 miles away from the Duval mine, and it is by far and away the largest man-made thing you can see in the landscape from that porch. It is astounding.
What will happen if the judge gives you, I guess you call it injunction relief, something like, what would the next step, could this hold things up?
Yes, this will stop construction until those lawsuits ultimately are completed.
So this is incredibly important.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to the live line, and I thought Rick would call. I'm glad he actually did. Rick Grinnell, who's been very closely associated with Southern Arizona's mining industry. Rick, have your say, my friend.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Mr. Elias, first of all, I think when we look at, when we're talking about scarring the earth, we're talking about less than 1% of the Santa Rita mountain range will be physically affected by this project. 1%. Second of all, the population in this country has increased threefold to 7.7 billion people since 1950. The need for copper and the associated minerals and mining products that come out of our resources has increased 9 times. There is nothing that's going to change that dynamic from continuing to occur. We talk about all these influences from outside the United States being able. This country has the most stringent environmental regulations in the world, number one. Number two, we are still importing, net importer of copper compared to 40 years ago where we were actual an export. This country needs to be self-sustaining in multiple facets in order for us to be able to provide for the other things that this country does for the rest of the world in enhancing the freedoms. And it also talks about the opportunities for employment. We live in an environment that has a sincere and genuine economic frustration when it comes to reality of employment opportunities. We need to be willing to look at the total picture and find a way as a win-win. And let me close with this. In 2013, Southern Arizona Business Coalition did a FOIA request. We uncovered at that time over $1 million of taxpayer resources that have been used to fight this project. It continues to use taxpayer resources, and they continue to lose. At some point, we need to be willing to say enough is enough. Let's accept the reality. We need the mines. We need the resources that come from these mines. And we as a society are better off having them.
All right.
Gentlemen, have a great day.
Okay,
thank
Rick.
You.
Rick, well, Rick, we were going to ask Rick to hang on. But
yeah.
Oh, you're still there. Good.
Sure, go ahead.
I would like Supervisor Elias to respond to what you said. And I noticed one thing, Rick, you didn't talk about the environmental concerns in your piece there. Go ahead.
No, I would be glad to.
Okay, but
again,
first, before you do that, Supervisor Elias, would you like to respond to Rick Grinnell?
I'm glad you called, Mr. Grinnell, and I wish you well, as always.
You too, my friend.
I don't think we're ever going to agree on this, Rick. You know, I believe in protecting our natural resources here in Southern Arizona. I believe in protecting the cultural resources of the people that have lived here since time immemorial. I believe, and I'm sure you would agree, that mining is a messy business. It's not clean. It's not easy. I understand it's necessary, but I also understand that Southern Arizona has given so much already. And I'm not so sure I'm willing to give up those Sky Islands, even if it's 1% of it. Because the damage to our water, the damage to our air, the damage to the vista, the damage to the cultural resources, the lack of availability of any kind of remediation in that watershed, the Sanega Creek watershed, is not available to us. And in all truth, I think that when the people here in this valley look south, some people see what they call the Santa Rita Mountains. Some people see what they call Josephine Saddle. And other people see what we call Chuctoag. But all of us love those mountains, and all of us respect the place we live. And I think that's something that goes beyond culture, language, and history.
Okay.
And that's why I believe in protecting it.
Okay, and Rick, quickly about environmental concerns, then I'm going to have to let you go. I'll move on to another topic, please.
Well, that's fine. And real quick, like I said earlier, we have the most stringent environmental protection rules throughout the world, number one. Number two, the water issue has been baited, debated, and frustrated many people trying to get to the facts. And the facts are simply this. This project, under the law, is entitled to pump 6,000 acre-feet of water from their own wells. Contrary to the pecan fields that pump over 20,000 acre-feet a year, we can live without pecans, but we can't live without the valued resources that come from mining. And okay. with respect to the historical and the Native American cultural issues, that area has been mined before. It has been dug up, and this whole process has gone through in a sincere opportunity to help remediate the area and to allow the Native Americans to properly and appropriately gain access to these areas so that they can preserve their historical heritage.
All right.
Gentlemen, have a great day.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks for calling. Rick Grinnell, who has been a big advocate for the Rosemont Mine and very closely associated with the mining industry. We're going to take a pause right here. When we come back, Supervisor Elias addressing the whole migrant issues and the migrants being at the county's juvenile detention facility. He will give us an update on that. But first, let's take a break. It's Buckmaster 1030, The Voice, trusted news talk for Southern Arizona. Be right back.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. Midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice. Trusted news talk in Southern Arizona. Our friends at Green Things, 13-acre site over at just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 3384 East River Road. Not only can you get all of your green things, everything for the garden, but that Zocalo Village, my, that great merchandise, much of it handcrafted in Mexico and Latin America and some European goods as well. Jan and Jack, the owners, do such a great job. Jan goes on these buying trips down to Mexico and other places and brings back just some really, really nice things. They've got five shops at Zocalo Village. So the next time you go over there to get your plants, check out the Zocalo Village, greenthingsaz.com. Richard Elias, Pima County Chairman, Board Supervisors Chairman, with me in studio. I hadn't planned to spend the whole show talking about Rosemont, but we've kind of gotten into a little debate there, which is fine. But before we do change topics, David's been waiting very patiently. David, what about Rosemont in your opinion, good or bad?
I'm opposed to it, but I want to bring the whole holistic issue. The first caller made a very, very pertinent point. It's due to population growth that we need the copper and why we're going to sacrifice the Santa Rita's for this gigantic open pit mine. I'm opposed to population growth. That's the reason why we have to sacrifice our public lands. And that's basically my opinion. And, you know, all the people coming to the country. Now, I understand Richard Elias is, for humanitarian purposes, trying to help the illegals, but I respect that. But it's the population growth that creates the need for more resources and why we have to sacrifice our public land. So I'm opposed to the Rosemont line, but I'm opposed to population growth.
Okay.
And we've got 300 million people in this country, you know, and that's what the more people.
All right. David, thank you. Got the point there. All right. Let's switch gears here. A divided Pima County Board of Supervisors in a special meeting here. Was that last week? Yeah.
Yes.
Just last week. Excuse me. That special meeting to deal with Catholic Community Services, allowing the nonprofit to use a portion of the juvenile detention facility to temporarily house migrant families. There has been flack, Supervisor Elias, from the left and the right on this issue. Was there any middle ground as far as you're concerned?
Not really. I mean, the real choice was that we had a situation where we were going to have, the Border Patrol was going to start doing street releases very quickly. And I think the county did a very poor job rolling out this notion. And so a lot of people were very frustrated, both on the left and on the right and at the other churches involved that are currently doing work with our migrants. And these are not undocumented folks. These are folks with legal status. We should remember that. This is not a giveaway to people that are not or that are not supposed to be here. That's ridiculous. So something had to be done. It's very unfortunate. I think the optics are terrible, but I think that the folks who are volunteers for Catholic Community Services are what makes this whole thing hospitable and make it work and give safety and give respite to people who are in a desperate situation. Is that wrong? No. And if I have to defend that from people who feel that we should not be doing any of that work, I'm perfectly proud to do that. I would like to see if the churches and other folks who provide the services currently to migrants can work together to find another solution. We will shut this thing down in 5 months and move them all to another place.
But you had to do something quickly here. And some have said, well, there's some other facilities, but as far as I'm concerned, what I've heard, those facilities were not ready to go. And for those folks who don't know, the monastery and the new Ross Rolney, the new developer owner of that, has been great. The optics were great over there. You had a former monastery helping these people, and that was great optics. Now, this optics, you've got this portion of the detention center being used to help these people. But the point is, it's a safe place.
All right. Well, and over at the monastery, the plumbing was no longer working.
Yeah.
So people were going to the bathroom outside, and people were taking showers outside. We have a place where it will be clean. It will be available to people. All our plumbing works. People will have a modicum of privacy in the rooms that we have as well. All of that is good. But the institutionalization of people is probably a bad thing. But I would suggest to you that no matter where we house people, they are being institutionalized in this setting.
Mm-hmm.
It's only for a few days. There are group meals. There are places where you sleep in groups and stuff too. It's unfortunate, but we have to respond to the need of humans when they need to move, when they need to travel, and when they fear violence. And I will always stand up for that issue and make sure that people are taken care of as long as I have anything to say about it.
How will the transition work? When will folks be moved over there?
We hope to have everything moved in by August 6th.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the current target.
And there's work being done to bring this, make it a little more...
it's a lot nicer. It's not going to be like a detention center any longer.
But
with that said,
right,
we have to recognize that it is institutionalizing people no matter where you go. As I said, this is not a private home. This is not a private place. You're living in a group situation. But we're trying to protect people from violence in their countries. We're trying to protect people who are in transit and are vulnerable. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and I'm proud of it.
And these people are headed for other places, right?
Generally, they stay 2 to 3 days.
2 to 3 days. They get a place to take a shower and get a couple of good meals, and then they're on their way.
Generally.
Yeah.
The travel nexus is always very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Getting people bus tickets or plane tickets. Have you ever seen a bus ticket, Bill?
A bus ticket.
It's like a 12-page book. It is, with all kinds of information.
Really?
And you hand that to somebody who speaks an indigenous language from Guatemala.
Yeah.
And they're scared.
Yeah, I bet.
So they need some help. And that's part of what Catholic Community Services provides and our community provides to people, because we love others. I think that's good.
Okay, I've only got about a minute, but you think this is the right decision, and hopefully there's 3 federal grants that are going to cover a lot of this cost. So we'll see if the Trump administration does approve those grants for you.
Well, and the other thing to remember is that that juvenile center needed to be repurposed anyways, because it is not being used in the same way it was when it was built, and we have far fewer people in juvenile detention, and I'm so glad for that. So this is a good thing in terms of that building and making it more usable to the public and the folks who paid for it.
All right, Richard Elias, thank you very much. Hope you're surviving the summer. Are you going to be able to get away for a while?
You know, I was up in Willow Canyon over the weekend.
Very nice.
And it was so beautiful and cool. And I woke up in the middle of the night. I went outside and the sky was clear and the Milky Way was so bright
because the
moon wasn't up.
Yep.
And I thought, I live in a great place.
There you go. Richard Elias, Pima County Chairman of the Board of Supervisors. Thank you, Richard. It's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Supervisor Elias and Bob Dio on the other side of the glass, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening. Around the Table with Jennifer English is next.